Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Above the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Shooting suspect's dog found in Vancouver. Rabies found in Cave Junction, and the OLCC records record sales of booze.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, January 27th, 2011. The injured dog of police officer shooting suspect David Durham was found Wednesday by a Lincoln County woman. Oregon State Police Lieutenant Greg Hastings said Thursday it was an important find in the search for the man suspected of shooting Lincoln City officer Stephen Dodd.
Can I do the he's our Huckleberry joke right now?
Sure, go ahead. Get
okay. It. No, it's already.
Was that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Troopers said that Durham and his dog went separate ways after the police chase, with Durham heading west toward the beach. The woman called police after seeing the dog in her backyard her home is east of Highway 101. A SWAT team was then able to entice Huckleberry into a vehicle and get him to the vet. Officer said he answered when they called his name.
Who's our Huckleberry? Who?
Hey, Huckleberry.
Who?
Give your Huckleberry. Good shooting dog. Hastings also released a surveillance photo of 43-year-old David Durham in the Lincoln City business about 30 minutes before the shooting, wearing the camo clothing described by police. Newport Police Chief Mark Miranda said investigators were confident Durham was, quote, hunkered down someplace, unquote.
Is that an actual scientific state of existence?
Like an empty vacation home. That's law enforcement terminology.
Being hunkered down, is that like when they say...
Hunkered down someplace.
Is that when they say like a... Here's the thing that they'll occasionally say that sort of fascinates me. They'll talk about a suspect and they'll say, we're pretty sure he's gone to ground.
Mm.
What does that mean exactly?
I don't know.
Does that mean he's just... When they say he's gone to ground, I always picture him just lying in like a shallow ditch that he's dug somewhere covered with leaves and just bamboo shoots.
Maybe that's what it means.
It's probably not an accurate representation of the situation, but I was imagining he's just, like, he's become some sort of a human trapdoor spider.
Well, isn't that a hunting term? That's something when you're chasing animals and when they're hiding really well or
something
like that,
they've
gone to ground.
That means it's gone into a gopher hole. I don't think that this guy's probably gone into a gopher hole.
No, using the kind of crackerjack police... techniques that we have grown used to here in the state of Oregon. Newport Police Chief Miranda also said, we're going to be here until we either find him here or have credible evidence he's somewhere else.
I figured it was just they were going to offer money to the guy's friends. They were just going to go to his family and go, look, we got $1,000. We'll give it to you right now. Tell us where your deadbeat loser kid is. Because that's always it. You find a guy like this and you'll find family members who need money for meth.
Yes, when pressed for further details, Miranda said, he repeated, we think he's hunkered down someplace, and said, He's probably waiting for us to leave, but we're not going to leave.
See, now here's the thing. Now, I know it's tempting to snark about that, but that's exactly... But you know that he's an idiot, and he's probably sitting there somewhere in a bar, watching a television, just waiting for them. Well, eventually they got to pack up and get on home, then I'll leave. I mean...
So then you say, we're not leaving.
However straightforward it may be, I mean, I think when you're hunting a moron, you probably got to, you know... One must become what one seeks to find, Dawn. You are listening
That's
to...
very Zen.
It's very Nietzschean of me.
Yes.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, January 27th, 2011. Coming up this hour, you get your entertainment news and science on the march. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And you can also get it on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm.
So what's with all the extreme weather lately, Rick Emerson?
I don't know. It sure is wacky out there.
The weather's just gone kablooey. The Northeast has its sixth snowstorm in 30 days. The West with record rainfall and warm weather. Physics professor, host of the Science Channel, and author Michio Kaku explains how the snowstorm is created.
Is this a winter or storm?
Winter one.
Let's see. Where'd my winter cuts go? Hold on a second. There we go.
When Arctic air from Canada hits moist air from the Gulf of Mexico, it's the moisture which then freezes, causing monster snowstorms.
That can't possibly be a real voice.
Kaku gives one reason for the cold weather.
No, hold on. Just listen back for a second. I got to play that one more time because I spent about 90% of the time that he was talking there trying to figure out, A, if it was a real accent, B, what combination of accents it was, and then C, if I was just making the voice up in my own head. Hold on a second. Let me just...
When Arctic air from Canada hits moist air from the Gulf of Mexico, it's the moisture which then freezes, causing monster snowstorms.
Okay, see, now that I'm actually able to listen, it all makes a certain kind of sense. Except that, here's the thing, is he's got the inflection that you associate with an Asian heritage or upbringing, and yet occasionally it just sort of drops out altogether. Like, about every fifth syllable, he would just become like a guy from Chicago. It was sort of weirding me out.
But then he says, that makes monster snowstorm, and suddenly I'm in a monster movie.
I was just going to say, suddenly all of Tokyo gone!
Yes.
But he only does that once in the sentence.
Yeah.
All of his other syntax is perfect.
Yeah.
So it was like he was a hybrid of mm-hmm. all language and verbal behaviors at once. It was sort of mystifying.
Well, here is more of Michio Kaku giving us reason for the cold weather.
There is one theory that says that the heating of the Earth creates more moisture in the air, which then collides with Arctic winds to create monster snowstorms.
See, but then he says monster snowstorms.
Yeah.
So he pluralizes occasionally. What is his name?
His name is Michio Kaku.
If indeed that is his real identity. All right.
Well, he is... He is a physics professor and a host of the Science Channel.
Here's the thing. I'm not saying that he's just making this up, but his explanation for why there's so much snow is basically that there's a lot of water in the air that then hits cold air and freezes and falls down.
Yeah.
Well, I could have told you that.
Well,
that's no explanation for how goddamn snow happens.
But that's the thing. No one asked you. They asked this guy.
But that's retarded. Something that a second grader could explain to you doesn't really seem like it requires a guy from... Where is he from?
He's a physics professor and a host of the Science Channel.
If I were to go just find like a 9-year-old in the street and I were to say, hey, where does snow come from? They go, well, it's water in the sky that freezes and it falls down and it lands and then there's snow. There's no demonstrable difference between that answer and what physics guy just told us.
Well, yeah, because that's the answer.
So-called Asian Professor Akuchi or whatever his name is.
The thing is, the answer doesn't get any more complicated if you ask somebody really smart.
But then why is he calling it a theory? Water that freezes and falls is snow or ice. That's not a theory. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, he's misusing the word theory. Really.
I see. Are we sure he's a real Asian?
I'm not even sure he's a real person or a real physics professor.
Just a guy named Ted.
I don't think he exists. I think somebody needed a soundbite, and they just got some guy from the office who did what they thought was a credible Asian accent and said, you're a physics professor, Michio Kaku. Why does snow happen? Monster snowstorm! Yeah, that was it.
He's the Stanley Spadowski of the of the Stanford Physics Department. Do you want to be an Asian physics professor? Okay. All right. You're listening to... let me just say now that we're sorry for whatever it is we're going to say in the next 48 minutes. It's, you know.
I regret nothing. I stand by everything I say over the rest of this hour.
Just to make it a total wash, I regret everything. Everything we've done so far, everything that's going to happen between now and 1 p.m. Pacific time. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, where all news come from.
Monster news.
Yes.
Fall from sky.
We should just totally have a show called Monster News.
Where we just do bad Asian accents. No one will be offended.
Oh, my God. That would be fantastic.
What could possibly go wrong?
Wouldn't you listen to a newscast that was just done by the stereotypical screaming Asian guy from from like one of those like Toho monster films?
I mean, as long as you broke it up occasionally with like an adorable Asian girl sounding like the girl on the Gorgeous Tiny Chicken Machine Show.
She'd have to be 30 though, and dressed like a sailor with a lollipop.
Oh, Obama gives State of the Union address, and then it would be horrible. It would be, and yet delightful.
Good Lord. Okay.
We'd get all the people who like manga.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm starting to regret everything. I was fine until I did that voice, and now I'm just filled with shame.
Head of economy say all job lost.
Rost.
We have to
say job rost.
Stop. We have to stop right now.
Oh, I apologize to anyone who's Asian anywhere, ever.
It's good that you're just lumping them all together, by the way. We're apologizing to all Asians, even though we are clearly speaking in movie Japanese.
Yeah.
We've just decided to put all of Asia underneath the umbrella because, you know.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah.
I'm sure I'll offend the people in Thailand later as well.
We should just go home.
Okay.
It's Don Taylor.
The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife says tests have confirmed 2 new cases of rabies in the Cave Junction area. The department says there have been a total of 9 cases of rabies in foxes in Joseph E. County, 8 from Cave Junction and 1 from Merlin since the beginning of 2010.
From where?
Merlin.
Is that a city?
Apparently so, in Oregon.
Okay.
Veterinarians are recommending that all pets in the area, including cats, be vaccinated. Horse owners are urged to consider vaccinating their animals. And residents are urged not to feed or attempt to handle wild animals. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And don't suckle them, like that story in The Oregonian.
So if you see some sort of a crazed, frothing raccoon, resist the urge to pick it up and take it home and cuddle it and call it Phil.
Yeah.
All right.
The holiday season provided a record-breaking boost in the Oregon Liquor Control Commission sales. Last December, the OLCC recorded a record $50 million in hard liquor sales. Yay, Oregon! Gross sales for the month reached $50.7 million. That's up almost 3% from December of 2009. What's going on over there with you?
I swear to God, I'm trying really hard not to laugh at this.
You're failing.
I am failing. And I know that you were just saying something important, whatever the story is that you were just talking about. I'm sure that it's a thing that impacts
important.
Us and that that it's going to have a demonstrable influence on my life. And I really ought to be listening to it with rapt attention. But I can't because somebody just at the end of our last conversation segment, somebody just typed in the screen. ROR.
Oh, OK.
I swear to God, that shouldn't be as funny as it is. And I was just doing my best to fight it down, and it just didn't really work.
ROR.
Okay. I'm sorry. Let's try that. Let's start again with this. Let's try that from the top.
In December, the OLC recorded a record $50 million in hard liquor sales.
Hooray!
That is up almost 3% from the previous year. Some of that money will go back to the state of Oregon.
Where does the rest of it go? Well, does it just go to the guys who make the booze?
Well, says OLCC Executive Director Steve Farrow, who I'm sure doesn't earn a large salary at his job. In these financial hard times, it is fortunate the commission can contribute additional revenues to the state. OLCC's profits are distributed to individual cities and counties, as well as to the state. Profit from OLCC's 2010 sales will help out schools, police organizations, and health services throughout Oregon.
So when he says some of that money goes back to the state, I don't understand what that means. If the state is buying Because these are this is the way it is throughout Oregon. It's not like it's right. just in Multnomah County. So the state has a liquor store. So Johnny Government goes and they buy a store, mm-hmm. and then they contact all the boozeries and they say send us your wares. And so Jack Daniel's sends them a bunch of stuff. They put it on the shelf. You go in and buy it
at a cost higher than that in states where they do not have state run liquor stores.
Yeah, a grossly inflated price.
Even though there is no middleman and it is coming directly from the wholesaler to you.
So the state pays like $5 for the bottle. You buy it for like 15. The state has now got 10 additional dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Why is only...
And they send like a quarter of that to the counties and the cities and the states where the counties and the cities where they're located.
Is that true? So that's because it's a state-run agency and not a county-run agency. So it's not the Multnomah Liquor Control Commission. It's the Oregon Liquor Control
right.
Commission, which means that if we're buying booze here in Portland, it's like going to some guy in Ashland.
Yeah.
Or wherever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then they cut a check to the county, to the different counties, and that's all based on the amount of sales. So the more booze your county sells, the more money you're going to get back. You know, you're going to get a pittance, really.
So, really, the more
we
drink...
It's really only a few $100. It's not a lot of money.
But the more we drink, the better off children will be.
Right.
Is what you're saying, because this is going to things like schools and education
yeah.
and, infrastructure.
Yeah, supposedly. But it's really a very, very small amount of money. So the question, of course, is where does all of the vast profits that the OLCC makes go? And,
ground?
Yeah. That's the question, isn't
okay.
it? Yeah. A man known as the Reptile Man, for showing off his collection of snakes at schools, was sentenced to 5 days on a work crew for keeping about 40 snakes, most of them poisonous, at his home in Vancouver.
Is this our good friend Aaron Flett?
It is indeed.
Ah, yes.
Aaron Flett pleaded guilty to keeping a wild animal without a license, although it sounds like he had many wild animals without a license.
Yeah, it was more than one, I think.
A Clark County District Judge deferred the case Monday, which means the conviction will be erased from Flett's record if he stays out of trouble for 2 years. He was also fined $678 in addition to having to do 5 days on a work crew.
Now, somebody asked if this was the same reptile guy that we had on the show at one point, and that is not the case. The guy we had on was a guy named Tim Criswell, who's in Malala or something, and he is an above board
yes.
Reptile and exotic pet dealer, still terrifying in his own way, but in a way that perfectly conforms to the laws and regulations of our community.
But it sounds like you are familiar with Aaron Flett
because he's been in the news a lot. Because I think they just went to his house. I think it was just like one of those. I think it was like that guy in UHF, where they just like went to. You know, it was like. You remember the UHF, there was the guy doing the nature show, but it was like in the Bronx, and it was all just in his apartment, and he's like,
yes.
You see here behind me? And he had, of course, the stereotypical Hispanic accent. Was, behind my sofa, I'm keeping a badger, you know? And then he made the badgers, we don't need no stinking badgers joke. And then Weird Al laughed. But it was sort of like that, where you just like went into his house, and it was just like, what's this? Well, it's a mongoose. Well, what's it doing in Vancouver? Well, I gotta have something to keep the cobra in line. What do you mean the cobra? And then it was, you know, and then it just became like Kenny Powers' apartment. So I'm almost certain that's why I know who Aaron Flett is.
Yeah, the snakes were seized in a raid a year ago
okay.
by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. He did not get them back, by the
no.
way. Most went to a reptile rescue organization.
Yeah, I would imagine that that's not a thing that they're just going to return to him. It's not like a Mad Magazine. You get it back at the end of class.
Okay, if you're good, you can have your snakes.
All right. You know what they never answer in these stories? They never say where the guy, like, got these things. It's like that story that you for some reason found not puzzling at all about how there was a guy who just had a camel or something. where was that? It was around here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The guy had a camel and everybody was all fixated on the fact that the camel was, like, stuck in a hole somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, the camel can't get it. And I was like, well, how did the camel get here? And I'm not saying, like, how do we transport things in general? Like, how would you get a camel if I told you to get one? It's not like Stan Marsh. You can't just order it. Like if I said, Don, you need to have a camel here by next week. Go get one. Like where would you get a camel?
Me personally, I would. Well, first I would.
You couldn't contact that guy.
Well, I couldn't contact that camel guy. But I would. I don't know. There's got to be places you can get camels.
But that's what I'm saying.
That's what the internet is for, to help me find a camel.
At no point in the story did they say, by the way, in case you're wondering, here's how he got a friggin' camel to Malala or wherever he was. That's what I think about the Aaron Flett guy in Vancouver, where he's got all of these snakes that not only, like, is he not supposed to have, like, no one's supposed to have them. They're supposed to be, like, in the Serengeti or something.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're in, you know, they're like, you know, they're on Main Street, you know, by Rose's Deli, and no one bothers to explain where they came from, which makes me wonder: is there some snake wholesaler? Is there sort of a kingpin of the illegal snake trade in Vancouver? We just don't know about it.
Well, yeah, there's probably some network of guys who like collect, you know, illegal snakes, and they talk to each other, and one of them says to another guy, it's like, you know, Jim the Snake Guy is getting in some cobras next week. Yeah, I mean, if people can find kitty porn, you know, and form vast networks of you know, contacts and have clubs and message boards and things for child pornography, I would imagine there's much the same thing for guys who collect illegal reptiles.
By the way, we're not saying that Aaron Flett learned how to collect illegal reptiles by trafficking in child porn. That's the thing. We're not saying at all in any way.
They're completely separate illegal activities, but they're illegal activities that are indulged in by a number of people.
None of this explains the camel.
They probably talk to each other.
By the way, just while I'm thinking about it, we should contact Alpha Broadcasting and just, we should trademark and then sell to them the term network of guys. You know? Just say that they can just skip to the bottom of the page. That's what they can call their whole outfit over there. All right.
Yeah. An air stagnation advisory that increases pollution levels was expected to last through Saturday for the Portland area, Southwest Washington, and the Willamette Valley. Conditions will be a bit better at the west end of the Columbia Gorge, but the stagnation effects will remain everywhere else, according to the National Weather Service. A weak front may bring some rain to Southwest Washington on Friday, but stagnant conditions were expected to remain in place through Saturday afternoon.
At the risk of calling back Professor Yakasoba, or whatever his name is, what is stagnant air?
I don't know. Okay. I have never heard the term air stagnation advisory before this morning.
Here's what this is like. This is like occasionally, and I'm not saying it's not a real thing, but I'm saying I don't think she could quantify it if she had to. Like occasionally, because, you know, Laura usually, she will go to sleep before I do, and she will, you know, like a lot of people, she'll have the glass of water on the bedside table, just as I have my sort of, you know, like my, whatever, mm-hmm. my bottle that I carry with me. And occasionally she'll say, "Hey, baby, before I go to sleep, can you get me some new water?" She'll say, "This water is stale." Mm-hmm. And I'll say, "What does that mean?" And she'll go, "You know, it's stale." And here's the thing. I do know exactly what she means, but I have no idea what it actually means in point of fact. Like, in terms of, like, in a scientific sense, I don't know what causes stale water. Now, we all kind of know what it tastes like, mm-hmm. and we all know the difference. Like, if you were to put two glasses next to each other, one is stale, one is not. Same with stale air. Yeah, kind of. You ever go into a room and you go, "Ah, the air in this room is just really stale. It's just really like it's just stagnant. It's been sitting here. It's, you know, it's whatever. It's stuffy." But I have no idea. I have no idea how I would describe that or how I would sort of chart it if I had to.
I know exactly why the water is stale.
Well, it has to do with ions, I would imagine.
No, it has to do with oxygen.
I was just making that
After
up.
It sits for a while, the oxygen leaves.
That's not true.
It does.
Here's why I know it's not true.
You have more oxygen in water when it's flowing because
the water is always made of the same amount of oxygen. That's how you can put it on a in a diagram. It's made of how many molecules of oxygen? How many molecules of hydrogen?
Sorry,
two in one.
Two in one.
So there's no more air in water at certain times than others. That's just not true.
All right.
That's ridiculous.
Okay.
Even I know that. Mm. I don't have to get the guy back from earlier in this hour who I'm going to reference constantly to them. Okay. Are you saying that there is a some sort of a change that happens in the water structure itself?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true, because then it wouldn't be water, it'd be something else.
When it flows through the pipes, when it's moving, when it is exposed to air, you get air as opposed to water, and more air mixed with your water molecules. And as it sits, it deoxygenizes a bit, and it becomes stale.
You're just on, like, you're on the thinnest mental ice right now, I can tell, where you are just, this is where you have the most tentative grasp of what you're talking about. But you know what it is?
It's the same reason why when you make coffee with fresh water right out of the tap. You don't use the water that's been sitting in the water heater, for example, or water that's just been sitting for a while, because it's literally stale.
I feel like this is sort of like you are describing something to me by sense of touch only. It's like I've given you an Evan Rude motor of some kind, and you are using your hands to describe to me, but you can't actually open your eyes to see it, so that you've got kind of a vague sense of what you're talking about, but it's not entirely accurate. I, on the other hand, am actually so dumb that I can't even say definitively that you're wrong.
So we're both just looking very stupid right now.
I'm just saying you can't add more oxygen to water because then it's not water anymore. Water has a specific amount of oxygen.
So what about carbonated water?
Well, that's carbon dioxide. That's something else altogether. That's a different molecule altogether. No. We should quit talking.
Okay.
All right.
A couple hundred Tea Party activists went to Capitol Hill to meet with the new Senate Tea Party caucus that right now numbers 3. Rand Paul of Kentucky pledges to remember the Tea Party backing that helped get him elected last year.
What is this? This is,
Paul.
Paul won.
Some said when people who...
I gotta brace myself for this. All right. We're back to the thing of some people somewhere saying some stuff.
Some said when people who came from the Tea Party were elected that Washington would co-opt us. Are we going to let that happen?
No.
That was the end of that. Okay.
No.
All right.
Paul of Kentucky says that even some Democrats are getting the message.
I went to my first State of the Union the other day, and guess who now is against earmarks? The president of the United States has been co-opted by the Tea Party.
All right. John Travolta is Governor Jack Stanton. By the way, somebody says, I would hate my life if not for you and Don discussing science on a daily basis. That's awesome. The follow-up message just says, now have Don explain Einstein's theory. Please. Please, oh, please. All right. Somebody agrees with you. Somebody says that if water remains in motion, it remains, quote, oxygenated. That could just be you typing from the other screen, though. I have no idea. It's somebody named 732546. So, there you go. Thank you, sir, madam. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Time magazine has outed longtime McCain aide Mark Salter as the author of O, the forthcoming formerly anonymous novel about President Obama. Unnamed sources have confirmed his authorship, and Time rounds up the evidence. Salter matches descriptions released by publisher Jonathan Karp. He's been missing in action since leaving a job in the Senate. There are stories in the book that only a McCain insider would be privy to, and Salter's non-denial denial was the closest to a confession of any suspect who was publicly asked. In a 2008 story about Salter, Newsweek's Howard Feynman describes him as McCain's speechwriter, former Senate chief of staff, co-author, biographer, and closest advisor, adding that even during campaign tensions, Salter's place at McCain's side has never been questioned. Salter has co-written 5 books with McCain, but did not respond to Time magazine's inquiries about whether or not he is truly the author of O.
Okay, first of all, okay, what is the actual title of the book?
O.
I don't know what's going on in my head today. I feel like my brain is carbonated because every time you say anything today, there's like 17 jokes that are all just fighting, for the alpha slot inside my mind. So I don't even know which way to go. But isn't there already a novel called O that's just about, I don't know, just about some chick that likes to be flogged?
That's the story of O.
O. That's the one I wasn't going to do earlier. So this is. This is not the story of O. This is just called O.
It's just called O.
It's impossible to have this conversation without sounding dense some reason.
That's also the name of the Cirque du Soleil show in Vegas, where they do everything in the giant water tanks.
Okay. And so is this another sort of like Romana Clay sort of a thing? Not unlike Primary Colors, which coincidentally I just referenced like 10 seconds ago.
Yes.
And this is about, but it's about the McCain. Is it?
It's Obama.
It's about Obama, but it's written by a guy who was McCain's speechwriter?
Yeah.
Okay, I've been kind of out of the loop for the last couple weeks. Although it's strange because I was actually just over the weekend, one of my favorite films of the last however many years, and one of my favorite political films of all time is Primary Colors. I love the movie Primary Colors, and I was a huge fan of the book as well. And I know a lot of people don't care for the movie because they find it distracting how much Travolta is basically just doing Bill Clinton. And I actually don't. I actually, to me, it's every time I watch Primary Colors, it's the same thing. It takes me about 5 minutes to get past the fact that he is just such a Clinton clone, but then he sort of does become his own. He becomes his own sort of alternate universe character as Jack Stanton. Anyway, and I'm just a big fan of the film. And so I watched Primary Colors over the weekend, and I started thinking back to, I guess it would have been, 1990, 6, 1997, when Primary Colors, the novel, came out, and the whole thing, it was written by Anonymous, and then later it turned out that it was Joe Klein, who was an author for, who was and still is a writer for Newsweek. It's interesting to see the evolution of the denial, though, because if you go back and you read the interviews with Joe Klein, who, incidentally, everybody sort of tagged from the very beginning as being the guy that that wrote Primary Colors, even Clinton himself said, well, I think it was Joe Klein that wrote that. And it's funny because they asked Joe Klein several times, point blank, back in 96, they said, did you write, like, are you anonymous? Or are you the guy who wrote Primary Colors? And he flatly denied it. And at one point, he was actually asked by somebody from, I believe, NBC News. Somebody said, you, Joe Klein, would you stake your journalistic credibility on your denial that you are anonymous? And he actually said, yes. And then, which is really bizarre. What's even more bizarre is that at one point, they asked the editor of Newsweek, they asked the guy who was the senior editor at Newsweek, is Joe Klein the guy who wrote Anonymous? And the senior editor, who knew that Joe Klein was anonymous, denied that he was. And so that's sort of interesting. When you've got a guy who runs a news magazine, who is in fact saying something, who is allowing, by the way, his own magazine to print things that are at odds with his personal knowledge. So that's just a strange whole ball of yarn. The whole idea of journalists writing things, you know, anonymously, or in this case, somebody who is, you know, who's a political speechwriter, but who also makes a tidy living on the side, being being a talking head. And you got to imagine that his identity was known to people, you know, early on. And so this whole guessing game of who is and who isn't, when you got to figure that everybody in the media probably knows.
Yeah, and in this case, Salter was just stupidly coy about it when he was asked. A former Kane aide was asked if Salter had written it, and the aide said, I wouldn't put it past him. And then when he himself was asked if he had written it, he said, I've been asked by the publisher, as apparently many other people have, not to comment. So, no comment.
Right. I'll see.
So it's like, okay.
So he's not even playing the game all that well.
No, he's just being cute about it. So,
all right, then. Here is John Taylor.
Mentions of gun control were noticeably absent from President Obama's State of the Union speech this week, but that doesn't mean he's not going to talk about it soon, according to aides. Unnamed administration officials told Newsweek that the omission was intentional. Obama didn't want the speech to seem as if it was capitalizing on the Tucson shooting, but that over the next 2 weeks, the White House will lean on Congress to get moving on stricter gun laws. It's a very important issue, and one I know that there's going to be debate about on the Hill, said Obama advisor David Plouffe. On Wednesday, senior advisor David Axelrod added, there's no doubt that Obama will be addressing the issue soon. I don't know exactly how we're going to approach it, he told the Huffington Post, but obviously these issues are out there and have been extenuated by the tragedy in Tucson, so he will engage in that debate.
When they say that something has been extenuated, that's an interesting use of that word. What does it mean in that context? When they say they're extenuating circumstances, I guess I understand what that means, but maybe only contextually. I realize now that I don't know that I've ever actually gotten a dictionary out and looked up the formal definition of that word. So if something has been extenuated, what has been done to it?
I'm really not sure. I think it's a similar word to complicated. But there are, we associate the word complicated with something being problematic.
Or it's been altered.
Yeah.
It's been augmented in some way.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm going to have to look that up. I got to write it down. I hate it when that happens, too, because then it makes me feel like I've just been a pretender all these years. Like I've been using the word without any idea what it means, which isn't true because contextually you can sort of understand it. But then you hear it in a slightly different context, where the usage is ever so slightly altered. And then you realize that maybe you've just been living a lie. Your whole life has been a charade.
And then someone asks you, so what does that word mean? And you just go, you know, extenuate.
I got to use the bathroom.
Yeah.
That's always my response, by the way, if I don't know anything at all.
I'll remember that.
Yeah.
Science, Rick Emerson, science.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here's your science on the march for Thursday, January 27th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. Here is Don Taylor.
Birdwatchers in Montreal say they counted a record flock of crows in the city last month, the largest since the annual winter count began in 1935. Officials of Bird Protection Quebec say an estimated 9,100 crows were counted roosting in the city's west end. The previous record was 5,116 crows counted in a flock on Côte Saint-Luc in 2008, the newspaper said. If you go down around Royal West Academy around dusk and look up, you'll see thousands of them, said Jeff Harrison.
Is this your hick voice?
No, that's my Canadian voice.
Okay, I couldn't quite tell. It sounded like you were putting on the rube there for a second, and then I realized maybe it was something else. It is Canadian, you say.
No, that's more okay. I'm quoting someone voice. My voice goes up, and I speak in a brighter tone.
I can tell you.
I'm quoting someone.
I can tell you were speaking as the man on the street. I just didn't know where the street was.
The street is in Quebec.
Okay.
So, but I don't actually do a Quebecois.
I don't think you mean
Quebec-wise.
You mean Boulevard.
Boulevard. Crows have discovered if they live in city limits, they won't get shot at. So they are much safer here, he said.
Okay. It's like we're just spinning a wheel of offense every few minutes on
actually,
the show.
This fellow, he's a professor of wildlife biology. His name is David Bird.
Okay.
And he said also about crows, they're omnivorous, so they'll eat just about anything.
That's great, including your soul, by the way.
They're also very social and intelligent, able to recognize and remember human faces, and use tools like twigs to get at hidden bugs.
They
for
can
food.
Remember human faces?
Oh, yeah. Didn't you know? Oh, yeah.
Why is that knowledge being kept from me? I feel like my terror has been incomplete up to this point.
No, crows, I saw this great program in the Discovery Channel about crows, and crows will remember human faces for a long time.
That means that if you wrong a crow, he's going to find you, him and his friends. They'll track you down. It may take years. It's going to be like an aviary version of Sleepers. You know, like it's going to, you know, 20 years are going to pass, then I'm going to go home, and they're all going to be sitting in my apartment smoking cigarettes and going, Rick, it's been a long time.
Yeah, there was a thing, and I think it's there's also a hereditary memory that happens as well, because there was a thing I saw where they had these crows, and a guy would wear the scary rubber mask and wear a hat and an overcoat, and he would scare the crows, and then those crows had baby crows, and those baby crows moved on, and they had the guy go and wear the mask and the hat and the stuff somewhere that one of these baby crows was that is now an adult. And the crow recognized him and ran away from him. So it's like they somehow pass on this memory of things to be afraid of. Crows are freaking scary.
That's like some horrible Dean Koontz, Raymond Chandler, like hybrid thing you're talking about there. About first they came from my pops, then they came from me years later. Fortunately, I was prepared, and because I'm a crow with a freakish, bizarre genetic imprint on my brain.
Yes.
Okay.
Fear the crow. Food manufacturer Kraft has teamed with Intel to create new face scanning store kiosks that recommend dinner options, all Kraft foods, of course, based on an analysis of the shopper's face.
It sounds like we could just get crows to do this. Two birds, one stone, you'll pardon the pun. If we just get just stick them behind a counter and go, hey, remember me? I was here last week. What should I order? The problem is they've only got that one answer, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And then you got to figure, is that Kung Pao chicken?
Or is it
General Tso's chicken?
Mac and cheese? And maybe Intel uses crows to create the software.
Maybe.
Debuting at this week's 2011...
Is today Thursday?
Yes.
Okay, just
of
checking.
Of course it is.
Okay, couldn't quite tell.
You know what it's like on Thursday. Debuting at this week's 2011 National Retail Federation Show, along with amazing checkout counter from the future from Adidas, the meal planning solution kiosk...
It doesn't really say that.
It does indeed.
A checkout counter from the future?
Yes, of the future from Adidas.
Of the future. Okay.
I don't even know about that, so we'll have to talk about that later.
My brain hurts.
I'll find out about the checkout counter of the future for the next hour. The meal planning solution kiosk is part of Intel's connected store concept, a sort of kiosk you might find in an upscale suburban market, catering to families desperate to find something that kids will eat. The average shopper, says Kraft's VP of Retail Experience, Don King, has just 10 recipes.
Don King?
Yes, his name is Don King.
All right.
Let me tell you.
The experience vacation will never be surpassified.
The average shopper has just 10 recipes in his or her average mealtime rotation. Spaghetti, pizza, hamburgers, chicken, etc. Kraft's goal is to help them expand their repertoire using Kraft products. When the customer passes by the kiosk, the digital signage, equipped with a sort of anonymous video analytics technology, zooms in on the shopper's face and instantly determines gender and age group to guess which products might exert some allure. For somebody who looks like she might be a mom of school-age kids, it would presumably recommend Oscar Mayer Wieners with a side of mac and cheese. A 20-something guy with bloodshot eyes might be sent to the Tombstone Pizza aisle. So basically, it looks at you and then it determines what it thinks you might want to eat.
So this is basically just, so they're just going to be profiling.
Right.
That's really what this is. They're just going to be doing ethnic and cultural profiling, but just to determine what snack you might like.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. By the way, signage is not a word. There is, it's just,
yes,
a,
it is.
It's not.
It's an actual word.
It's not a word. Just because you stick a bunch of letters together and say it out loud doesn't mean it's an actual word.
Just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not a word. It's actually a word. Signage is a word.
How is signage different from a sign? That's like saying crispy is a word.
Well, it is.
It's not. Crisp is a word. Crispy is talking like a child. Crispy is how you say crisp if you're three. It's not an actual word. Here, you know what else isn't a word? Moisturizer. That's not a word. That's like pseudo-atomic age nitwittery from the 50s. Moistener is a word. Moisturizer? Not a word. Not really. I mean, I guess if we say it enough, of course... I am at pains to note that ain't is now listed in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, by the way, with no admonition against its use or an indication that you will sound like a nitwit if you say it. So, you know.
The Thursdays are hard on you, aren't they?
I'm not. I'm just saying. It just, signage, you know, here's what signage leads to. Use of the word signage, which, by the way, you hear constantly. I would imagine you heard this, I don't know if you heard this when you worked at a newspaper or not, but if you work at a radio station, you're going to hear signage all the time. You're going to hear that is a phrase you hear. Are we going to be able to have signage at the event? And he would just say, why? We'll have signs at the event. Is that what you're talking about, Bob? Yes, signs. Okay, well, there you go. Why are you giving yourself more work by adding extra syllables? I mean, I'm not disputing that at some point it'll show up in a dictionary somewhere, but that's not the same. You know what signage leads to? Signage leads to things like this. I can tell that you want to say something, so go ahead.
I can tell
you're Googling something to say, so I'll let
I'm
you do it, and then I'll continue.
According to Merriam-Webster, signage... are signs or a system of such signs.
Okay, signs and a system of signs are the same thing. So that's a circular definition, first of all. That's actually, but means it's not a definition in any event, in any way, in any form. Signs and a system of signs are the same thing. So saying that that then defines the word is incorrect. Also, I stipulated like 10 minutes ago that it would be in a dictionary. Doesn't mean it's a word. That's all I'm saying. Here's what saying signage leads to. This leads to a coworker of my wife's, and this is a real person who said a real thing. She was having a meeting with some of her people under her in her department, and she said, "Okay, so as we head into next week, we really need to be planful." And I was like, "What?
That's not
okay. Why is planful not a word then?"
Well, planful really isn't a word.
Why is signage a word if planful's not a word? They're the same thing. You're taking a noun and you're putting a suffix on the end of it.
I didn't invent it. I didn't make it up, but it's still a word.
Planful?
No, signage. Signage is actually a word.
Then planful's a word. You know it's true. You have to be consistent about these things. That's all I ask, Don, is you just have some internal consistency to your linguistic purity. Otherwise, what have we in terms of a civilization? What have we?
I'm done.
What have we?
I'm done with science now.
Really? You finished? You're washing your hands of it?
I'm washing my hands of science.
Somebody just types, "I love Thursdays."
Just beaten all of the joy out of me.
Really?
Yes. I just feel pummeled now.
That didn't take nearly as long as I thought.
Wow.
I figured that would take all hour or several months, possibly.
All right.
Well, you have been slowly working on me since June.
It's true. I'm poisoning you every day a little bit.
Oh, no.
By the way, that was Science of the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find more about them at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. If you are dealing with electrical issues at your home or your business, if you're going to be moving into a different structure, if you're going to be remodeling a facility in which you currently reside, either commercially or, again, if it's your house and you're going to be remodeling it or you're going to be just augmenting it with a different kind of broadband access, if you're going to be taking one business and you're going to be duplicating it in two or three different locations, you want to make sure you pass on the inspection the first time. You can get that taken care of right out of the gate, and you're going to make sure that it's done correctly and the very first time around, so you're not going to have the job redone at some point. It's going to take you time, it's going to take you money. You get it done right the first time. It's a lot simpler for everybody, and it's a lot less expensive for you in the long run. 503-252-1609 is the phone number. 503-252-1609. 1609 or squireselectric.com. They have free estimates so you know about what you're going to pay up top. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier, and they're jolly good people. That's 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They're the folks who help bring you science on the march. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Actually, on the word front, when I worked at a newspaper, a couple of the ad salespeople, somebody discovered the word verbiage, except they discovered it wrong, and they started saying verbiage. And that got the other sales guys saying verbiage. And I would walk into the graphics department, and they'd be talking to them about ad layouts and saying, and then, you know, the graphics will go around here, and then if you could just put all of the verbiage in this area. And finally, I just lost it after about a week of hearing this, when I finally had to say, first of all, the word you're thinking of is verbiage. There's no such word as verbiage. You're thinking of verbiage. And second of all, you're using it wrong. What you mean is just copy or text or even just words. You could just say put the words in here, but you're using verbiage wrong and you're pronouncing it incorrectly.
So they were using this is just a generalized term for any sort of writing, any sort of copy.
Essentially, yeah. Anything that involved putting words in somewhere, they would say, and then they would say verbiage. Well, actually, they'd say verbiage.
How would they spell it? Like, if they had to spell that out loud, what they were saying.
If they had to spell it, I'm sure they'd spell it V-E-R-B-A-G-E.
Right.
You know, but they didn't know what the word was they were using to begin with. So
it was just like a thing they heard.
And then all three of them were doing it. And I just wanted to punch someone.
Is that where you realize that we ourselves really are just crows? That's really all we are. Just some guy has a shiny object, suddenly everybody has a shiny object. You know, the funny thing about the word, and the funny thing about verbiage, you know, the V-E-R-B-I-A-G-E, is that it actually means, like, it's a thing you don't want.
Right.
I mean, because it means to be overly elaborate, mm-hmm. You know, and often at often to be elaborate and to be excessively verbose at cross purposes with what you are trying to say.
Yeah, to be using a lot of obscure or overly flowery language that's unnecessary.
And Lord knows that won't get you anywhere in a career.
No.
Sorry.
Three passengers on a TriMet bus helped police arrest a man accused of roughing up the driver as the bus was in motion on Wednesday afternoon. TriMet said just after 1 p.m., the bus had left the stop near downtown Milwaukee's Transit Mall. Witnesses told Milwaukee police 49-year-old Jeffrey Todd Pavey had been agitated and was screaming before he got on.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Okay. Pavey began barking orders and demanding the passengers move out of his way, police said, before he then stormed to the front of the bus and began harassing and shoving the driver. Passengers Derek Kamahoahoa told police he would intervene if Pavey began assaulting anyone. He was saying he was the chief of police and that he runs the city and he's going to put us all in jail,
when said everybody
Kamahoahoa.
Knows that Mr. Kamahoahoa is the chief.
Right. And Cheryl Kanakoa is now just bashing her head against the keyboard.
Is Cheryl Kanakoa upset about the way we're treating Chief Kamahoahoa?
As Pavey's behavior continued to escalate, police said writers Gerald Menifee, Malcolm Vancouvering, and Derek Kamahoahoa.
Okay, just stop. Admit right now that you're making all of this up.
I could show it to you.
Is this like, are you just doing like a Danny Kaye thing over there or something?
Look. All right, I tell you, those are all actual names.
Oh, my God. It starts off with the Jeffrey Todd Pavey, which, by the way,
Jeffrey Todd Pavey!
See, I was going to do it, but I thought I would just lose control. Today's one of those days where I would do that, and I wouldn't be able to get it back. Derek, where did this happen? This was in Milwaukee. All right. Kamahoahoa. All right, well, you're right. And then there was a guy named Vancouvering. And then Malcolm Vancouvering and Derek Kamahoahoa.
Yes.
All right.
They were apparently riding the bus together, which is the beginning of a joke that I don't have an ending for.
Okay.
So anyway, they pinned Pavey and held him until officers arrived. So congratulations to Menifee, Vancouvering, and Kamahoahoa for pinning Jeffrey Todd Pavey.
Okay. This is like yesterday when we had that. By the way, we should say that the Rick Emerson radio program improbably. Here's the thing. When this show comes to an end every day at like 1, you know, when we wrap up Legion of News, unbelievably, we are really not even like 25% of the way through our broadcast day. This is sort of like when you hear, you know what Legion of News is like? Legion of News, a fine program, obviously.
I'm proud of it.
One of which we are very proud. In a strange way, it is almost like when you get to... It's like when you got like when you kids got the first version of Doom when it came out, or maybe the Quake, or now like with an app you get your Angry Birds free. This show in some ways is sort of like the free version of Angry Birds, and then you can unlock the subsequent levels for like 99 cents or something.
Although the show does stand on its own nicely.
Well, that's what
Thank
I'm saying.
You
but,
very
you know,
much.
But so do the first few. But sort of the first three worlds in Quake. That's what I'm saying. There's nothing wrong with them. I'm not trying to cast aspersions. I'm just saying, improbably. You say, my God, this is just what a cavalcade of knowledge and insanity this show is. And here's the thing. We're ever so much more insane by around 3:30 every day.
Yeah.
I mean, like any like shred of lucidity that we had is just sort of gone.
Plus, sometimes I'm drinking.
And sometimes Greg and Sarah are in the studio, which means that you just drink more. That day is today, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program takes the airwaves around planet Earth. 147 countries victimized by our genius. Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler are going to be joining us today. We will be talking to those guys about a new project of theirs. Also, Geek Watch, Penis Watch. We've gone this whole hour without talking about penises, by the way. I mean, so
I know.
That's, I'm just saying, like, imagine how crazy it would be if there was penis or clergy talk.
Right.
So Geek Watch, Penis Watch, Clergy Watch, that's all coming up next hour. Again, Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon will join us, and we'll be talking to our good friend Eric D. Snyder live at the Sundance Film Festival. He is the host of Movie BS with Baron Snyder Fridays, 11 to noon right here at Cascadia.fm, but he will be joining us next hour as well. And Cheryl is typing a message. She's demanding that that I stop mocking her people. So,
yeah.
Okay. Just there you go. This is like yesterday. We were talking about we had the clown watch that was also a monkey watch.
Yes.
And we were saying that they ought to have a sitcom or something together.
Clown and monkey.
Yeah. Or like
clown and monkey.
Chimpy and the clown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. This is just like that.
All right.
Yeah. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano announced the end of the nation's color-coded terror alert system on Thursday afternoon. It says she announced it this afternoon, but it's already... Wow, I'm in a time warp.
It was afternoon where she was.
Okay, at George Washington University, the new alert system will be more targeted to deal with specific threats. Secretary Napolitano says you'll start to see the changes immediately.
Today we're beginning
God damn. Wow.
Apparently by scaring me out of my skin with her voice is how she's going to start it.
I think the new alert is just going to be her bellow, which is which is broadcast over our cities.
Okay.
All right. Let's brace ourselves. Okay. All right.
Today we're beginning a 90-day implementation period in which federal, state, and local law enforcement, governments, private and non-profit sector partners, airports, and other transport hubs will officially transition to the new system.
Okay.
She says the new alert system will target specific areas that are being threatened.
Depending on the nature of the threat, the alert may be limited.
It's like you can just see the Subaru every time she talks.
Depending on the nature of the threat, the alert may be limited to a particular audience, like law enforcement, or a segment of the private sector, like shopping malls or hotels.
I don't even know. Here's the thing. If you ask me right now
what
she just said, not only do I not understand it, I don't recall any of it. I already could not repeat any of it back to you because her voice is just fascinating to me. It's like some sort of a klaxon that is assumed human form. There's nothing inherently off-putting about it, and yet it's very grating for reasons that I can't quite quantify.
She sounds like the woman, and you won't know this because you don't watch Glee, but there's a woman who is the football coach on Glee, and her character's name is Coach Beast. And she sounds like Coach Beast.
Depending on the nature of the threat, the alert may be limited.
Yeah, there's something there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news for...
Everything's so loud today. Of course, maybe my headphones are just jacked up.
I was going to say, you got a volume knob over there.
Yeah, that's right.
Or a potentiometer. Here's Don Taylor.
Rumors that Jennifer Aniston is adopting a child are not true. So stop shopping at Baby Gap. And,
doesn't that sound like she herself wrote it, but like in a really thinly disguised way, like it's supposed to have come from a newspaper or a publicist?
Yeah.
She's just scrawling it at home and shoving it under the door?
Her rep said to People magazine, it's completely false. Jennifer is not adopting a baby from Mexico, nor does she have a nursery in her home, and she has not hired a nanny. It is all a work of fiction. So.
Who was claiming any of these things?
You know, I get this magazine that I did not subscribe to called OK.
Yeah.
And I don't know who half the people are in the magazine because they're all from reality television.
OK.
It's called OK with an exclamation point. And I swear to God, every single issue, there is some story about how Jennifer Aniston is desperate for a baby. And I somehow don't think that it's true at all. And nor do I understand why we're all supposed to care so much if she procreates.
Well,
but every single week, it's like all about poor Jennifer Aniston's love life and whether or not she's going to be able to like get somebody to knock her up.
I don't think. Look, here's the thing. If the women in my neighborhood are any indication, it's not that difficult. I mean, it just, you know, even if you don't want it sometimes, they just appear, apparently, by the bushel. So it seems like if she really wanted a baby, the evidence
and
that
she's a gazillionaire. She can just go buy a baby like Angelina Jolie.
That's what
if
I'm
she
saying.
Wants one.
Yeah, the evidence that she doesn't want a baby is the fact that she doesn't have one because it's like, you can, you know.
Yeah.
Hell, I probably know, people that would just give her the kid right now. She wouldn't even have to pay for it.
No. Speaking of Glee, during an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, Glee creator Ryan Murphy expressed his frustration when Kings of Leon rejected a request to use the track Use Somebody on the show. F you, Kings of Leon, said Murphy.
Excellent.
They're self-centered a-holes.
Well done.
They missed the big picture. They missed that a 7-year-old kid can see someone close to their age singing a Kings of Leon song, which will make them want to join a Glee club or pick up a musical instrument. It's like, okay, hate on arts education. You can make fun of Glee all you want, but at its heart, all we really do is turn kids on to music. In a statement, Kings of Leon frontman Caleb Followill said the group is not sure where the anger is coming from. We just said no to a license for a TV show, which we do a lot.
By the way, I think we all know where the anger is coming from, Kings of Leon.
Yeah, we all want to say F you, Kings
Sir,
of Leon.
That guy speaks for us all. That man
Thank
is
Thank you,
a,
Ryan Murphy.
Really, he never needs to do anything ever again to earn my respect. I will love him until the end of my days for that statement alone.
TV Line reports that Mick G is the top choice to direct the Wonder Woman pilot for NBC.
What could possibly go wrong?
The network greenlit the David E. Kelly penned project last week.
Oh, that could go wrong. That's right. I forgot about
that
already. Okay.
Yeah. Motley Crue frontman Vince Neil pleaded guilty to driving under the influence and will spend 2 weeks in jail for his actions. Last June, Neil was arrested by authorities while driving on the Las Vegas Strip in his black Lamborghini. The 49-year-old, who lives in Las Vegas, was released on $2,000 bail after his arrest.
The 49-year-old who is spongy and puffy and covered in a viscous sheen of sweat all the time. Like it's like he's just bulging out of a badly fit sausage casing constantly. No, it's true.
Former boxer Mike Tyson and his wife Lakia Spicer welcomed a baby named Morocco Elijah Tyson.
Doesn't a Lakia Spicer sound like a thing that you would use to grind up, you know, like peppercorns?
Yes.
Using the Lakia Spicer, you'll see that I get a real nice cover on this. Look at that. See how even the dispersion is? And this is really going to add an extra zing. Your kids are going to eat a lot more of these.
And also, Best Buy has signed Ozzy Osbourne and Justin Bieber to star in a Super Bowl commercial.
I'm in hell. What kind of weird, kind of insane world am I in? Am I asleep? Am I still at home?
Ozzy Osbourne and Justin Bieber. There's a green room that would be fun to hang out in, isn't it?
Like at some point, my mom is going to wake me up and tell me I'm late for school or something today. Jesus. Are we done?
Pretty much. We have like a minute left, and I have... Here, let me read this. This isn't entertainment related, but it'll be quick. So make the music go away. Vice President Joe Biden made a couple of mistakes at the microphone when he appeared at the Enter One plant in Hancock County, Indiana on Wednesday. The first came when he mentioned a state senator. Senator Gard is here. Want to recognize him? I was told he was here, said Biden. Senator Beverly Gard, in fact, was in the audience. She met with Biden after the speech.
Oh.
Vice President also did not get the name of the company right either. At one point, he referred to it as Enron One leading the way. Enter One certainly hopes to build a reputation that's slightly better than that of it.
That's awkward. Well, there we go. And with that, we bring the curtain down on this episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. We will be back again tomorrow. That is Friday, the 28th at 12 p.m. Don't forget, this program is available later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com and also on your mobile device at this mobile.cascadia.fm. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kenakoa. Koa. And so forth. Forget the Rick Emerson radio program airs next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Thank you for listening. This has been Legion of News. We will see you again tomorrow. Have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you please?
Portland.